Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money. And hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin. I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I ain't had nowhere to stay. I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I ain't had nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me. And however, he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit. So I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car. I went to a payphone. And I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called and I punched in the code and the dude said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home because this is it. I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. my whole thing, I wanted to be on TV. I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday and I could hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. Steve, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It said, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sober from the Comedy Caravan. This was a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back. And I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida. And that night, I made the 150. Club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone, I call Chuck Sutton, I say, hey man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I called Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I parked my car at the airport. I got it. Got on a plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't going to move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in a dressing room on the 6th floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man. He said, man, I thought I told you don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw on the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the 6th floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself, he introduced himself. I'm sitting there, another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduce myself. We don't know each other, ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I done had this 4 pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken done wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie. Then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass. Then he went back to them jokes. And they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened. The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just said, Lord, Lord, Lord. And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. They paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I had never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job on a Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host Amateur Night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted Amateur Night, and I was killing. But every time I went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting. And I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn-back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting, that it will never happen, no way under the sun. The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida, I make $300. Then I go to New York, I make $750. Almost got $1,000 out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything, that you have to remain faithful. Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept. So you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Here's the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift. The thing God gave you at birth to do, it is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you're doing, you're wasting your time. Do you hear me? You're wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, if you just do it 10 more times.
Okay, my board's acting kind of funny here. I had to repeat what I don't know if you hear what I said. Today's podcast is titled Learned Helplessness. Learned Helplessness. Just heard of this term for the first time a few hours ago. My take on the term learned helplessness, I think mainstream westernized education, well, particularly state-sponsored education, basically to a very high degree, not in all cases, but to a very high degree, is a good example of how a person can be learned, it's learned helplessness. I got to figure out how to put that together. But what's your take on that term, learned helplessness? I'm thinking of a mainstream educational system when I hear of it. 619-768-2945 if you have any thoughts on how do you process that term, learned helplessness?
Hey, guys. Hey, guys. Welcome back to my channel. In today's video, I'm going to be talking about how much money I make on YouTube. I figured I'll do this video. I did a similar video, but it was a long time ago. But it's definitely changed since then. I'm going to kind of talk about that. I'm doing this video not because I want to brag, not because I want to do anything. It's honestly, and of course there's an ambulance. Also, do not mind my face, okay? I just did a hydrating mask. Like, you know, one of those hydrating sheet masks. Oh my gosh. Do it like every couple of days. That's why, do you hear people beeping? Oh my word. I'm doing this video because this is like the most asked question, one of the most asked, I always say the most asked question, but it really is the most asked question I get, or one of them, especially with strangers. I'm always taking cabs, I'm always in Ubers or Lyfts, I'm always traveling by myself or just in life, and everybody wants to know, what do you do for a living? How the heck do you make money? How do you support yourself? And then when I tell them I'm a YouTuber, especially people of a certain age, like people that aren't millennials, that are older, I can see that they don't really understand how maybe we make money on the internet. I get a ton of those questions. So this video, I'm just going to be talking about how much money I make, how I make money, and if in case one of you guys wants to try your hand at YouTube or Instagram or, you know, working for yourself, I think it's a great, I love my job. It's not an end goal for me. I don't want to be a YouTuber for the rest of my life, but it's a great stepping stone. It's amazing. I love my job so much. And the amazing thing about being a YouTuber or Instagrammer is it opens so many doors. The world is being ran right now by the internet. So I'm going to talk about how I make money. I'm going to talk about sponsorships. I'm going to talk how much money I make month by month. And then I'm going to talk about some things maybe people don't know. So let's get straight into the video. Make sure you guys follow me on Instagram at Mary Jane Byarm, because I post there every day. And you guys can keep up with me on Instagram. I know I've talked about this before, but there are new subscribers and there are people who just click on this video. They don't even know me. They just want to know how YouTubers make money. So here's how YouTubers make money. Google runs ads. So you probably saw an ad before this video, and I'll put an ad right here. Ads. Boom.
Make you money on YouTube.
Google is the one who runs the ads. They put ads on your video, and so every time somebody clicks on your video, that bird is going crazy. Based from the ad revenue of this video. Now, every YouTuber's ad revenue is different. The percentages are different. It all depends on which country you live in. I know Americans make the highest ad revenue because Google is American. I'm American. So I make American ad. I have American ads on my channel. I'm an American channel. I'm American girl. So I have American ads running on my channel. 80% of my subscribers are from America. We can see our analytics. We can see exactly who's watching. So it is very beneficial to be an American YouTuber, although there are YouTubers in other countries who do great as well. But I'm just trying to paint a picture that every ad revenue is different for different countries, and even within different channels within the same country. Everybody gets paid a different percentage of the ad revenue. So that's how you make money. Also, you make money from every video collectively on the channel. So even if you go back right now and you watch an old video from a year ago that I posted, I still get paid I still get paid from any views on my channel at all. So all the old videos, it pays to have a lot of videos on your channel. It pays to be consistent. Consistency is the key. Oh my gosh, with these sirens. Channel, you have to reach, I believe, 10,000 views before they start putting your ad, they first start putting ads in your videos. So yeah, when you first make a YouTube channel, you're not making money. You have to reach 10,000 views first. And then you can apply for the Google AdSense program. And then if you are approved, you get ads, you get your videos monetized. That's how YouTube works. Okay, so that's one way YouTubers make money, is the ad revenue of a video. The other way is affiliate links. For example, if I recommend you a product, I love these rings. I love this hair oil. I love this face lotion. And I put a link in the description box, and anybody clicks on that link, I get paid revenue if it's an affiliate link. They're not always affiliate links. If it's an affiliate link, I get paid for just the link being clicked on, and I get paid if that person makes a purchase under my affiliate link. That is another way YouTubers get paid. Affiliate links. Links in the description box that you might click on and you might purchase from. Okay, another way YouTubers get paid, and sometimes this is the most, like the highest grossing way YouTubers make money, is sponsorships. So a brand will email you, or let's talk in context of me. So say a brand emails me and says, I see that you're you know, viewers really seem to like the stuff you recommend. Would you mind trying my product? And then if you like it, you can advertise it to your fans or to your viewers, to your subscribers, and I'll pay you this much to do it. It's the same thing as a commercial on the TV while you're watching TV. It's the same thing. But yeah, so a brand will ask you, how much will you charge to talk about my product? You give them a rate. Rates are usually based off views. They're not usually based off subscriber count. Views are more important than subscribers. And then that's a huge way you make money on YouTube, sponsorships. So a company will ask you, you know, like I just explained. And obviously the rates get higher the more subscribers you have or the more views you have. So you can be paid as little as $100 to do a sponsorship, and you can be paid as much as $60,000 to do sponsorships. I know a couple YouTubers that have a million plus subscribers, and they get paid sometimes $60,000 to mention a product, which is crazy. So anywhere between $100,000 and $60,000. You can get paid for a sponsorship depending on your views and depending on your audience. That also does matter. Brands, a lot of times before they ask to work with you, they'll ask you to screenshot your analytics. They want to see how many men versus women watch you. It is way more beneficial to have mostly women viewers because women rebuy things a lot more than men. So it pays to have a high percentage of women watching you. It also pays to have subscribers around the age of 18 to 24. If that is your maximum, like if that's the majority of your viewers, you'll get paid more because 18 to 24-year-olds buy the most. So they want to see your analytics. They want to see your percentage. And we can see all that in our creator studio on YouTube. We can screenshot and send it to the brand. Okay, this is the age group that's following me. This is the gender that's following me. This is the country, the most, you know, people in this country follow me. So based off of those things, you'll get paid different rates. That's another way YouTubers make money. Also, Instagram kind of ties in when you have YouTube. You usually are on Instagram, and same thing with sponsorships on Instagram. A brand will ask you to talk about a product in your stories or talk about a product in a post. Same thing. Okay, so the golden question. Everybody wants to know how much money I make. So, like I explained, there are different avenues, either ad revenue on a video, sponsorships you're doing, or affiliate links. With all that combined, I make anywhere between $15,000 to $30,000 a month. I'm not going to give you an exact number because, honestly, it's different every month. Some months I have lots of sponsorships. Some months I don't have as many sponsorships. Some months I'm getting a lot of views. Some months I'm not getting that many views. It all depends. Some months, you know, I talk about a revolutionary product and that helps me. And, you know, a lot of people go and get that product based off my recommendation. All these different things tie into how much money I make a month. So it's never the same number, but it hovers around the same number. And it's anywhere between $15,000 a month to $30,000 a month is how much money I currently make with all of my efforts combined. Also, all YouTubers are different. Just there could be a YouTuber that has 100,000 subscribers, and there could be a YouTuber that has 10,000 subscribers, and they could be making the same amount of money. Honestly, subscribers don't really count. It's about views. It's about total views on your channel. You can go to a YouTuber and click like the about and see how many collective views they have on their channel. That's like a more accurate viewing of like their impact or their, you know, how much money they might be making. Yeah, so every YouTuber is different. Every YouTuber gets paid different AdSense as well. All YouTubers get a different percentage of ad revenue. It's never the same. And I think that's all. This video was very straightforward. and yeah, as you grow on YouTube, your money grows usually. So I think it's a great job to have. I love it. I love being a travel vlogger, but I also love the fact that I talk about hair because, you know, I've gone through a lot with my hair and got it to where it is now, healthy and long, and my hair tips, because that's honestly how I got my hair together, was Natural Niecy. She helped me so much. I watched her for years. She helped me get my hair together and skin and everything like that, so I do a lot of those videos, but I love being a travel vlogger. I love being a YouTuber. It's a great creative outlet. And I'm a workaholic, and YouTube is great for workaholics because you can just work as much as you want. And I need that. And I love being my own boss. I love creating my own schedules. I love doing what I love and getting paid for it. That was my intention starting YouTube. I was like, I am, you know, maybe if this takes off, that's great, but I'm never going to do videos that I think are going to make me money. I'm going to do videos that I would want to watch, videos that I am passionate about. And if it picks up and makes money, it picks up and makes money. So I think that's very important as well. Don't create a YouTube channel because you want money. Create a YouTube channel because you love the creativity of it. You love the creative outlet. You love what you're posting. And if people kind of gravitate towards that, then that's amazing. There are a lot of YouTube channels right now, a lot. So it is very competitive space right now. But I love that about YouTube, and I think it's an amazing thing to do. It doesn't discriminate. You don't have to be a certain race. You don't have to be a certain age. You don't have to be a certain body type. You don't have to be anything on YouTube. You can be whoever you want to be, and you can still make it a job and have it work for you. So that's everything I want to talk about in this video. If you guys have any other questions for me, leave them down below. I tend to be quite honest with you guys because it's the truth, and I honestly would want to know. I would want to know how much YouTubers make if I was not a YouTuber, and I would want to know how it works. So, any other questions, leave them down below, and I'll see you guys in my next video. Bye!
A good evening. Do not attempt to adjust your radio. There is nothing wrong. We have taken control as to bring you this special show. We will return it to you as soon as you are grooving. Welcome to station WEFUNK, better known as We Funk, or deeper still, the Mothership Connection, home of the extraterrestrial brothers, dealers of funky music, P-Funk, Uncut Funk, The Bomb.
Coming to you directly from the Mothership. Top of the chocolate Milky Way, 500,000 kilowatts of P-Funk power. So kick back, dig, while we do it to you in your eardrums. Oh, me, I'm known as Lollipop Man, alias the long-haired sucker. My motto is,
make mine the P-Funk. I want my funk uncut. Yeah, make my funk the P-Funk. I want to get funked up.
Now this is what I want y'all to do. If you got faults, defects, or shortcomings, you know, like arthritis, rheumatism, or migraines, whatever part of your body it is, I want you to lay it on your radio. Let the vibes flow through. Funk not only moves, it can remove. Dig? The desired effect is what you get when you improve your interplanetary functionship. Sir Lollipop Man, chocolate-coated freaking habit form. Doing it to you in 3D. So groovy that I dig me. Once upon a time called now. Somebody say, is there funk after death? I say, it's 7 up. Yeah. Let me put my sunglasses on. That's the law around here. You got to wear your sunglasses so you can feel cool. Gangsta lean. Y'all should dig my sun rooftop. Well, all right. Hey, I was digging on y'all funk for a while. Sound like it got a 3 on it, though, to me. You know, I was down south and I heard some funk with some main ingredients like Doobie Brothers, Blue Magic, David Bowie. It was cool. But can you imagine Doobie in your funk? Ho! W-E-F-U-N-K. We funk.
Make my funk the P-Funk.
Ho!
I want my funk uncut.
Oh,
make my funk
yeah.
The P-Funk. I want to get funked up.
Him.
I want the bomb.
Oh.
I want the P-Funk.
P-Funk, y'all.
I want the funk fast zone. Make my funk the P-Funk.
Home of the extraterrestrial brothers. Once upon a time called right now. Ain't it funky now? Far around. Hey! Doing it to you in the ear hole.
Make mine the
peace.
Make my funk the peace.
It wants to get
funked up. I want to get funked
up. I want the bomb.
I want the bomb.
Peace funk.
Don't want my funk that song.
Oh, make mine.
Make my funk the peace. Before I take it home.
Hey,
make my funk the peace. Before I take it home.
Yeah.
What's up, guys? This is Alex Martin, and this is the Content Creator Podcast, where I stimulate your mind and show you how to market your grind. And today, we're going to stimulate your mind. I got the legend, the icon, Freeway Rick Ross. How you doing today, bro?
I'm good. How you?
I'm good, bro. Can't complain.
No doubt, no doubt.
I can't lie, man. Right now, I'm like, I got the jitters, you know?
I see you geeked.
Yeah, I'm excited. And first, I want to say thank you. Like, you didn't have to come here, and yet you did it, man. So I appreciate it.
Oh, come on, man. This is how I do. You know, everybody's important.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's movement is important. Even if it's not important to me, it's important to them. And if I don't respect your movement, you shouldn't respect mine. So
you're big on respect.
Absolutely.
Like, that's one of the things, like, when I did my research, you know, one of the things that you said was, You just like want to respect everybody. You don't want no enemies.
No, I don't.
Where did that start?
I don't know. You know, my mom was always kind of like open. You know, like my house was the place everybody played basketball in my backyard, and we played football on the side of the street, and you know, when we had food, everybody could eat. You know, at our house, so it was kind of like an open society, you know what I'm saying, in a loving environment. even though, you know, sometimes it was chaotic as well, but I guess I got it, you know, from being around my mom with that kind of open openness, you know, the willing to accept other people, and sometimes even if you don't agree with, you know, their philosophies, you know, it was still okay to be friends.
Yeah, nah, that's real. That's one of the things I felt like the older generation, like, y'all are better at, because y'all can disagree to agree on certain issues.
Yeah, yeah.
Our generation, man, they be on some bullshit. You know, everybody.
Well, now they want to kill you if they don't like what you say. You know, I don't like what you say. I don't like what you wear. You know, I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah.
So definitely a different time.
Speaking of which, I saw you take a picture with Mike Bloomberg. Politics is mainly where that happens. So. What's up with that?
Well, you know, it was interesting, and I caught a lot of slack behind it off my social media, and you know, I tell my people that you know, I don't work for nobody.
Yeah.
You know, I never had a job, so I don't really know what it's like to have to take orders from anybody, and I kind of make my own mind up. You know, I do my own study, my own analyzation. And I'll take other people's opinion and I'll even chop it up with you about the situation, you know. But at the end of the day, I'm going to go with what I believe, even if I have to take the lick, you know. Okay, I was wrong.
Yeah.
Spank my ass, you know.
Accountability,
you know. So I got a call, you know, from the mayor of Compton, and she was like, Bloomberg is going to be in town. Would you like to meet him? And... you know, all I do is listen to the news. You know, I don't really listen to hip hop or the radio. You know, my station is always tuned to the news, because every now and then they'll drop a jewel that'll throw you out front. You know what I'm saying? I like to hear the people come on, the experts, and talk about, you know, just like the coronavirus. I've been really keeping up with that.
I'm going to go into that afterwards.
Okay.
They got something against us.
And she called me and she was like, Mike Bloomberg is going to be in Compton. I was like, Compton? This dude is worth $58 billion and he's going to be in Compton?
Yeah.
You know, some of our stars never come to Compton.
Yeah.
You know, I think the last time Dr. Dre was in Compton is when they were shooting straight out of Compton. When the incident happened with Suge, you know, that's how often they come to Compton.
And that's 2020, and that's probably 2013. No, 2014, maybe.
It was
a long time ago, though.
It was a while.
Yeah. So you got a billionaire coming.
So what I'm saying is that people don't come to Compton.
Yeah.
They don't come to L.A., South Central. We just don't see those guys. Here, Mike Bloomberg, he's in Compton. You know, he's walking the streets, you know, like... the same guy that I listened to on the radio was talking about, oh, I'm finna put money into the black community.
Nah, that's...
I want to know, are you telling the truth?
Yeah.
Are you really going to put money in South Central? And if you are, I'm the one that you should be going through.
Yeah.
You know, you should be talking to me about putting money into my community, because a lot of times they put money in, but they give it to the wrong people.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. I've worked with people with the same mindset as you. Independent, be your own boss. We don't allow no Red Cross, no nothing in between.
Why should we?
Yeah.
When the people are saying that they want to do it, why shouldn't we go out and let them do it with us?
Yeah.
Somebody that the community trusts.
Right.
Somebody who loves the community. I really love South Central.
Yeah.
You know, I love my people.
Yeah.
You know, I love all my followers on social media, you know. I guarantee you, you know, not one of them will ever tell you that they came up to me and told me that they follow me and I didn't, you know, give them a brother hug and, you know, we go eat dinner together, you know, they go to the arenas with me, because I don't feel that it's big me, little you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Nah, that's humble, man.
I feel that we all equal and we all deserve the same amount of respect. You know, and you know, and I understood the frisk and search. You know, can nobody can really talk about it more than I can.
Yeah.
I got the scars in my face that prove police brutality. All of this is from police brutality.
Yeah.
All these scars. You know, nobody on the street do that.
Yeah.
Police did that while I was handcuffed. So when you're talking about police brutality, I know police brutality too well. Matter of fact, I'm going to court right now. I was sitting in my car about 4 months ago. Me and my son were sitting in the car. One of my friends had came in, and he got one of those tickets where they give you the hotel and the car. You know how you buy those tickets online, and you don't know where your hotel is.
Yeah. It's like the app, too, nowadays.
He got this hotel, and when we pulled up, I was like, wow. You know, this looked like one of them spots.
No, really?
Yeah, but it was. But anyway, he goes to check in. I'm parked in the loading zone, and the cop pulls in with his lights out, and I swear it was people all over the place, and this cop pulled right up to my car.
Out of all the cars,
all the people walking,
yeah.
He pulled right up to us. And he walked up to my window, and he asked me for my ID. I gave my ID and my registration, insurance, everything, you know, because I'm straight. You know, I'm an auto dealer. And he was complaining about the car didn't have a plate on the front. So I said, oh, well, I'm a dealer, and I got a dealer plate on the back.
Yeah.
So my car don't have to have a plate on it, don't have to be registered or nothing.
Yeah.
Here's my WIC card. For the auction, and he takes it and he runs it, and then his partner comes over to my son and he's like, you on probation or parole? And my son was like, yeah. And instantly everything changed. It was like, get out of the car. And I'm like, hold up, y'all got the right to demand him out, but you can't demand me out because I'm not on parole. No, you get out of the car too. Put his hand on his pistol. So I got out of the car, you know, because I know they will shoot us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
We know incidents that people have done nothing but wearing a hoodie, and I did have on a hoodie.
Yeah.
You know, I keep my hoodie on.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got out the car, and after I got out the car, he asked me to sit on the ground. I'm like, I don't sit on the ground. Unless I want to sit on the ground. I don't want to sit on the ground tonight, you know? So he said, if you don't sit on the ground, I'm going to take you to jail. And I said, well, you're going to have to take me to jail because you might take me down, but I ain't sitting down.
Yeah.
And when I said that, that's exactly what he did. He took me down.
So he hit you with, like, evading arrest?
He charged me with obstruction. I'm charged right now. I'm going to court right now.
Yeah.
With obstructing an investigation and resisting arrest. So when you're talking about police brutality, I know it firsthand. I have my own task force, and these guys, 35 got suspended. I think 6 or 7 went to prison, you know, for civil rights violations, stealing money, planting drugs, lying on the witness stand, fabricating search warrants. So when you talk about corruption with police, I know it firsthand. I testified against those cops, you know, that one night they planted drugs on me, you know. They planted drugs on my girlfriend. My mom, they planted a gun at my mom's daycare center just to take her license. Just tactics to cause you financial heartache is what they were doing. So when you talk about police brutality, I know it firsthand. But I also understand that everybody deserves a second chance. You know, we've all made mistakes. You know, I'm no longer a crack dealer, and I know that selling crack was probably one of the worst things I ever did before in my life. And I've done quite a few things. You know, I'm not a saint. But selling crack may have been the worst thing that I ever did, and the least thing that I'm fond that I've done in my life, even though that gave me my notoriety, my fame, and all that. I know that so many other people suffered from me being able to drive a car with a nice paint job or have wheels on it or have some nice clothes or have a house. Somebody else, kid, probably went hungry because the mom has been to food stamps or whatever in order to facilitate this high. And I'm asking people to give me a second chance, you know. So if I want a second chance, shouldn't I allow other people to have a second chance?
For sure. And like that's in a way, like that's avoiding, because we all hypocrites in our own right. But it's like when you're mindful of it, I feel like self-awareness, I feel like that helps out a lot to where you just like, you know, where you a second chance. For me, it's like being open to other people's opinions. It's like, you know, if I disagree with you, I don't have to, I don't have to examine my feelings about that shit.
Yeah, you don't have to crucify them.
Yeah,
you know.
That's from it, like, oh, you got their point of view. That's that. Let it live.
Right.
So, how did the meeting go with Mike Bloomberg?
Well, we just met briefly that day. I'm hoping that that the dialogue will continue.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where it's gonna go, but at the end of the day, I think that we all should hold him accountable for his words, and we shouldn't just, you know, throw up our hands and say, oh no, I don't want no parts of that. Because one of the things that I like about what he said is that at least he's saying he's gonna do something for the black community.
Yeah, nah, for sure.
No other president has ever said, I'm going to do this specifically for the black community.
Yeah.
Hasn't been done. Obama didn't do it.
Yeah.
Obama never said that he was going to do anything for the black community.
Yeah.
And we love Obama.
Yeah.
You know, we put him in presidency. But he never once committed a certain thing to the black community.
Yeah.
And for Bloomberg to at least say it, maybe he won't do it. I'm not saying that he's going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I never said that.
Yeah.
But I'm saying at least he said that he wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And that he's going to do it. So with that, to me, is a step ahead of everybody else.
Nah, I can tell that, Dan. So if people on social media, y'all need to chill in the comment section. I've seen the comments. Y'all need to chill. Take a break.
Well, you know what? And they have the right to voice their opinion.
Sure, sure.
But what I would like for them to do is not only make an opinion, but also do the research to go with your opinion. Because now if you're basing your opinion on non-facts, then it's just an opinion.
Yeah.
And opinions don't really mean much without the research and the facts to go behind it. So I would prefer for my people to do the research. And then on top of that, let's hold him accountable, because
yeah.
He may win the presidency. You know, I think they say he spent already $170 million,
yeah.
More than everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And Trump can't keep up with him, because you know he said Trump ain't a real billionaire.
Yeah, yeah. He's what was it? He's talking to him about the Twitter deal.
Yeah.
The Twitter exchange that they had, and you know they asked him, and he said, do you think it's fair? I'm paraphrasing. You know, do you think it's right to argue in public with, you know, for kids to see two billionaires arguing in public? And he went, who's the other billionaire?
Well, you know, he's not the only one that said Trump is not a billionaire.
Yeah,
you know, my guy that owns Virgin Records, I can't think of his name right now,
Richard Branson.
Richard Branson also said that he's not a billionaire, and he makes billionaires look bad.
Speaking of billionaire status, as you move, you know, and I'm structuring it the right way, you were considered a billionaire at one point in time.
Yeah, some people say that.
Yeah. How was that, like, when you were, like, in that time period?
Well, you know what, when I was selling cocaine, I loved it. You know, I was willing to die for it, kill for it, but I was lost. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't in my right mind, because had I been in my right mind, I could have taken what I had and not only set myself up, but so many other people.
Were you, like, ever, like, counting, like, how much money was coming in? Because I know for me personally, like, I set a number for me. At one point in my life, I want to make $50 million. I don't know how it's gonna happen. I hope that it's tech. So, like, was there ever a number, like, growing up?
My number will change. You know, when I first started selling drugs, I wanted to make $5,000.
Really?
That was my goal.
Hey,
I just wanted to put some wheels on my car,
yeah.
Get my car painted, and I was gonna be good with that.
So, did you always have the entrepreneurial mindset?
I guess I always did, but I didn't really know what an entrepreneur was.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a poor house, you know, single family, you know, only the moms. And my mom knew nothing about business, you know. She didn't know about structuring a business, how to start a business. But, you know, even when I was a kid, I used to organize car washes with all my friends. I would cut the grass. I used to hustle bottles, cans. So I guess I've always had the entrepreneur skill, but I never knew how to channel those energies into what I eventually learned how to channel it into.
So now you're doing the king of marijuana industry?
Yes, I'm going to be the king of marijuana. I plan on being the biggest marijuana dealer in the whole country. That's my goal. I don't have a number of how much money I want to make. I don't even care about the money.
Yeah.
I just want to be the biggest. I just want to dominate the industry. I want my brand to be the biggest brand in the industry.
And it's LA Kingpins, right?
Yeah, LA Kingpin.
Yeah. How long you had this going, you know? And what made you even jump into the industry?
It was a long story, man. I just got off parole, and I wasn't doing well financially. I was getting eviction notices on my door because I was paying half my rent and couldn't pay the other half. And sometimes I'd be $200 short, and sometimes I'd be $700 short. And I just wasn't in a space that I wanted to be in, you know, financially. And one of my guys came by, you know, to celebrate with me the day I got off parole. And a white guy out of Ohio named Matt. He's a stoner. He's a real stoner.
Okay.
I'm talking about a real stoner. When you see stoner, he's a real stoner. So he came by and he was like, man, I'm going to San Bernardino to the High Times event. You ought to ride with me. You ought to parole. Come and celebrate. Smoke a joint. And I was like, man, I ain't smoking no weed. And because I hadn't smoked weed since the early 80s. You know.
And so, hold on. What year is this that you get off parole?
I got off I don't even remember what year it was. Probably like, let me see, I did 6 years on paper, so it would have been 09, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 maybe, 14, 15.
Okay.
So he talks me into going to the event with him. He's like, man, I bet you'll sell a lot of books out there.
Yeah.
And so I went and grabbed 6 boxes of books, like 200 books, and we headed out, man.
Yeah.
And just like he said, I didn't even get in the gate, and they started buying them books. Man, Rick Ross, man, we love you.
Yeah.
Thank you for all you did for us, for your sacrifice. And basically they were saying that with me exposing the CIA's actions and the cocaine also helped make marijuana legal in California. So they just showed me so much love, man. It was like this new environment that I never saw before.
Yeah.
I never saw people with like trash bags of marijuana, big jars of marijuana like this big, just sitting on the table in the open, and then the cops are walking by protecting it, and people are smoking weed, and man, they was giving me like, I was tripping, right, because I don't even know that I'm going, but then there's people here like, man, I made this popsicle for you, it's vegan.
Yeah.
I made this sucker for you, it's vegan. I made this candy bar for you, it's vegan.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is the kind of love I'm going to get.
Yeah.
So they bought all the books, so I didn't have to carry no boxes outside. I had a big wad of money.
Yeah.
And man, dudes was coming up with money, wads of money like this, like we used to have when we sold cocaine.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I want some of this.
Yeah. I can feel that.
So when I went home that night, I called my brothers, and I was like, man, y'all didn't tell me about this, man. Because at that time, what I noticed, I had never even noticed that it was a marijuana industry, you know. Because I was kind of like, you know, it's kind of like when your tunnel vision, and my vision was to get off parole because I had a PO from hell. This guy was trying to send me back for everything. So I know what I had done is I had done just what I was supposed to do to get off parole. And I also kind of felt like, you know, getting into marijuana would be a stepping stone of me going back to selling cocaine. But then what I realized is that I had already committed to myself that I was never going to sell cocaine again, so I didn't have to worry about that. You know, that was already established.
Yeah,
yeah, that's over with. Right. So no matter what happens, you're not going back.
Yeah.
But then I was like, it's legal.
Yeah.
Rick, it's legal, yeah. Rick. You can get a license. You're going to have a permit. You know, you get to ride around with the paperwork. So I jumped in, man. I started with $500. And I did pretty good. I got up to... they stopped me on the highway one day. I was going up to the mountains to buy marijuana,
yeah.
And they stopped me. I had $105,000 in the car. The police took my money. But I started to do really, really well in the industry. I saw the similarities between the marijuana and my skills that I use in the cocaine business.
Yeah. So if you had to give advice to people right now, like mindset-wise, what would it be? As far as like applying it to the industry?
Well, with any business that you go into, you want to be focused. You want to have tunnel vision.
Yeah.
At least during the time that you're doing whatever it is that you're trying to do.
Yeah.
You want to be focused right into that. You don't want to... I mean, let's use boxing, for instance, because, you know, I'm working with, as a matter of fact, we got a fighter fighting tonight.
Yeah.
Saul Rodriguez is one of my guys. I've been working with Saul since he was 16.
Yeah.
I went to a fight, and he was 16 years old. He came up to me, and he was like, man, you should be managing me.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the champ.
Yeah.
And I was like, this little boy, get out of here. And here I am now in Dallas. He's the main event tonight. But you have to really be focused on whatever it is you're going to do, because if you don't want to be the best, then you just want to be mediocre.
Right.
And if you're mediocre, you're going to get mediocre pay.
Facts.
But if you're great,
yeah.
You know, why? I just do so much studying. You know, I study like Michael Jordan. Why was Michael Jordan getting $45 million a year? And then they got another guy who's only getting $500,000.
Right.
Was this guy... Was Michael that much better than this guy that he should get, what?
45.
That's what, 100 times more,
yeah.
More money than this other guy.
Nope.
So what was the difference? Well, skill set, but Michael focused on what he was doing. This other guy probably was playing around, you know, last one to practice, first one to leave,
yeah.
You know, slacking on all of his workouts,
yeah.
You know, wouldn't do his shoot-arounds like he's supposed to.
Yeah.
And that's usually, you know, people say, oh, well, they get talent. Well, my teacher says that the talented guys are always first to practice and the last to leave. So maybe work ethic and talent goes together,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Maybe there's something that can't be separated, you know, because I hear people all the time arguing, you know, oh, well, he's just a natural. Well, somebody what I would call a natural is a guy who never picked up a ball before,
yeah.
And comes on the court and totally dominates.
Yeah.
I never saw that before.
Nah, this is fact. He's talking about LeBron and how much he invests in his body, and you know, 100. Well, at least they say like millions he spends on his body. But, you know, the guys like that, they put that time in. You know, even like listening to you talk earlier, you do your research.
You have to do your research.
Yeah.
I mean, without research and without knowledge,
and applying it,
you're going to suffer.
Yeah.
You know?
And I had struggled with that for so long, man. It like literally, I'd be a big reader, but I wouldn't apply it.
Yeah, you gotta apply it. You know, in one of my most favorite articles, in LA Magazine, they did an article on me, and it's called Rick Ross is Dreaming.
Yeah.
You gotta read that article one day. I was in prison with a life sentence, and the guy comes up and visits me,
yeah.
And he's talking about me reading these books, this Get Rich. I mean, I really didn't have no option. I had a life sentence without the possibility of parole. They tell me I'm never going home again.
Yeah.
And I start reading these books. And he calls them the get rich quick genre, you know, what the mind of a man can believe, the body can achieve.
Yeah.
And he said that I was testing out their plausibility. And you know, I didn't know what plausibility meant.
Yeah.
So I went and looked it up in a dictionary. And plausibility means that I was checking to see if they really worked. And that's what happens with us. We don't check the plausibility We just take our opinion and run with it. I believe that everything that we do, everything that we hear, should be tested. One of my favorite books, Think and Grow Rich, he talks about having an open mind.
Yes.
You know, can you open your mind up to accept new things? He asked me a question one day. I read the book like 25 times,
yeah,
too.
That, and then I know The Richest Man in Babylon.
It's another one of my favorites,
yeah,
too. Yeah.
So you're big into the Get Rich Quick book.
I don't really figure that. I don't even think they're Get Rich Quick books,
because
they don't talk about that you're going to get rich quick overnight. You know,
it's really about the mindset.
The mindset.
Yeah.
The dedication, the sacrifice, the burning desire, all those things play a big part in becoming successful. And so often people think that when they see somebody like a Michael Bloomberg that he was lucky.
Yeah.
You know, now a Donald Trump whose daddy and granddaddy was rich is a different story. But that's why he's been jacking off all their money.
Yeah.
You know, they say he lost more money than anybody in the
bankrupt
twice. I think last year they say he lost $800 million or something of other people's money.
Yeah. See, that's crazy. And you know, that's another thing too, man. I hear a lot of guys preaching, and like I can't really speak on it because I haven't applied it yet. But like the whole use other people's money.
Oh, I love it.
You hear it?
Yeah, I love that. But I took it a step further.
Okay. Talk about it.
See, when I was in prison, that's what they talked about, using other people's money.
Okay.
So I was like, wow, what's more valuable than money? No. Their brain.
OG talk. Go ahead.
Huh?
That's an OG talk.
Listen to me. What's more valuable than their money? Their brain.
Yeah.
Why? Because their mind generated the money.
Game.
So if you know what they know, you can generate what they generate. It's just like baking a cake. If I show you the recipe to bake a cake, all you got to do is follow that same recipe. You're going to get the exact same cake.
Yeah.
As long as you keep it in the oven just the same amount of time. Now, don't keep it in there 10 minutes longer because you might burn that thing.
Yeah.
Don't take it out early.
Yeah.
Don't put extra milk. Or eggs, whatever the ingredients, the flour, put just like the ingredients say, you can get the exact same cake.
Yeah.
So what I said is, why not use their brain?
Yeah.
No, let them keep their money.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that you're good with networking then.
Oh, I love networking.
Yeah.
I'm a networking fool.
Which is why you're big on respect. So, hold on, yeah, come on, man. It's like, come on, drop that game. So, all right, when you're networking, what's like the first thing, like, let's just say people skills.
Listen.
Listen more than you speak, right?
Listen more than you speak. Because if you talking and they can't talk. And if they talking and you talking, you can't hear what they said.
Right. They say you can't transmit and receive.
So I'm big on listening.
Yeah.
You know. I like to do my talking too.
Yeah.
You know. But when I'm around people who are spitting game, I listen.
Gotcha.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm good at copying people.
Yeah.
You know, somebody say, don't be no copycat. But my man say, make sure you copying the right cat.
Yeah. I once heard Shaq say, like, this is at the time when I was doing music. He was like, whatever you do, do a remix. Like what you saw, throw your spin on there, but make it better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Same scenario.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we copy somebody, copy the right cat. Because you're going to be copying somebody. Everything that we know, we learned from somebody.
Speaking of learning, you're an author. First off, let me tell you, I know that you couldn't read as a kid.
Yes, I didn't know how to read until I was 28.
Wow. So what made you get into, like, reading?
Well, I was in prison and they told me that I was never going home again. And there was some old cats, you know what I'm saying, that was jailhouse lawyers. And they was like, man, you count on your lawyer to get you out?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I got a good lawyer, man. He went to Harvard University, top of his class. and I'm paying him well. He's like, man, that dude got kids. I was like, yeah. You think he care more about you than his kids? I was like, nah, I know better than that. He got a wife. Yeah, he got a wife, man. You think he care more about you than his wife? I was like, nah. He got a practice. I said, yeah, he got his own law firm. You think he care more about you than his law firm? I was like, nah, he ain't gonna risk his law firm for me. He got other clients too, don't he? Now, he might care more about you than his other clients, but he don't care more about you than all his other clients put together.
Yeah.
I was like, are you right? They was like, so you think he wants you out of jail better than you should want yourself out of jail? And I was like, no, you right.
Yeah.
I better get on my studies. So I went to work, you know. Marcelli made me some cue cards so I could learn how to read. I got me a brand new dictionary, one of them nice, pretty ones, and I like to have it around. And everybody would come and, man, let me see your dictionary.
Yeah.
And I was highlighting it. And first book I ever read was Malcolm X. And when I read Malcolm X's book, I saw that he couldn't read either. So then I felt kind of good, like, damn, Malcolm X, one of the baddest dudes that ever lived, and he couldn't read either. He taught himself how to read in jail.
Yes.
And then when I was reading the book, he talked about, if you lock us up, we're going to learn how to read and write.
Yes.
So I saw myself in Malcolm, you know. So he kind of like gave me courage to like to go forward, to go hard. And I saw that I could do what Malcolm did.
Yeah.
You know. And I just started. I just went to work, man. But that's how I started reading.
Okay. So then you start writing books.
Yeah.
You're a legit author, man.
Yeah, man. It was the book came about because all the youngsters used to come to me and ask me for game. You know, they was going home. So, cause you know when you're in federal prison, you're gonna be in there with a guy who might be going home in 6 months.
Yeah.
And a guy with a life sentence. Might be in the same dorm, you know, might be living in the same space. So these youngsters used to come to me all the time, and they would be like, Rick, man, I never made $10,000 selling drugs. How was you able to make so much money? And I would just give them game, you know, like, look, man, I took all my money and reinvested it back into my sack.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want a car.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted a bigger sack.
Yeah.
You know, I started working to get a pound. I started with an eighth. I had 125. My partner had 125. So we started with an eight, what we call the eight track.
Yeah.
And from the eight track, I wanted to get a seven. And from the seven, I wanted to get a half ounce. And then I wanted to get an ounce. And I just wanted to get bigger, 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 bigger.
Right.
And I kept pulling all my money. The only money that I would take out was money that I was eating off of.
Yeah.
And I told them that was really my secret to being successful. And later on, I learned that they call that compound interest.
Right.
You know, where you're compounding your money back into the business. Then when I read Richest Man in Babylon, he said specifically that you're supposed to take that money out for yourself, you know, every time. Don't spend all your money on things that will be soon forgotten, I think is his correct word.
Okay.
You know, like you buy a pair of shoes, you wear them for a year, and they gone, and you throw them away, you forgot all about them. To take your money and buy things that you can remember, you know, things that's going to last, things that's going to be around, it's going to hold value. And that's basically what I did in the cocaine business, but unconsciously did it. So now I can consciously do those things because I know that these are the things that I should be doing.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I try to lace these dudes. You know, I spoke at the high school the other day, and a lot of the kids, they saw me on Vlad TV, so they was like, man, I saw you on Vlad. And I said, did you hear me when I told Vlad the only reason I talked to him is because y'all listened?
Because
if he wasn't teaching, he wasn't allowing me to teach y'all. Because really, I should have a reality show right now.
Yeah.
You know, they
Wait,
should.
I see you going casting.
I am. I'm starting one. But I should have been had it. Really, we should have documented my whole journey since I got out of prison. I mean, it was a hell of a journey, you know. Floyd Mayweather picked me up from the halfway house. Yeah, so you're talking about, it's been a journey that we could have got a lot of lessons from. It's been a lot of lessons lost. And that's kind of like this book, The 21 Keys. The 21 Keys is kind of like,